Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 12th of May. It's our All Things Political Hour. We do have more primaries tomorrow, actually, one in West Virginia and one in Nebraska. And we have two guests, one from West Virginia and one from Nebraska. We're looking at whether or not they're meaningful primaries, what the results of those primaries would mean. But, you know, essentially we're going to be asking, it looks like this race might finally be over. And we'll ask if it's been a negative campaign. We will talk about what happened to Senator Hillary Clinton, who really was the inevitable candidate some time ago. Many people believed her victory in the Democratic nomination battle was a sure thing. What happened here? Is it a good idea for her to go forward? Is there any way for her to win the nomination at this point? Are the Democrats terribly fractured as a result of this campaign? Or did she make him really a stronger candidate because of the fact that she brought up things that would have been brought up in the general election race? So we're going to be looking at all of these issues and have some fun this hour. And welcome your phone calls, as we always do. We have two guests with us this hour, Professor DeAndre Ore, who is Associate Professor of Political Science. And Dr. Andre Ore is at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, and is working on two book-length manuscripts, the first exploring the contours and dimensions of black conservatism, and the second examining race and gender within the context of the increase in the number of black legislators following the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Dr. DeAndre Ore has published a number of book chapters and articles. And we're very happy to have Dr. Ore with us on the air. Good morning. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also, Professor Jim White is our guest, an associate professor of political science at Concord University, where he's taught since 1998. He worked in various capacities in the United States Department of Health and Human Services, administering child care and public assistance programs. Also served as a legislative aide to both New York Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan and New Jersey Governor Thomas Kean. Professor White, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
So let's talk about West Virginia and Nebraska. Are these sort of meaningless primaries tomorrow? Is the candidate Senator Barack Obama? Are we going to learn anything from the results of these two primaries? Let's start in West Virginia.
Thank you very much, Kathleen. I wouldn't say that they're meaningless. The candidates are both here, and they're both campaigning hard. Senator Clinton is campaigning much harder than Senator Obama. Senator Obama is coming back for this to the state for the first time since March 20th. But Senator Clinton's still here and running hard in West Virginia, trying to show that she is still a very popular Democrat. And I think she's going to do very well. Her husband and Chelsea have been here a lot throughout the state, including here at Concord.
Mm-hmm. The poll numbers show that she is way up in this state. What does that kind of victory mean in the race right now?
Well, I don't think anything that happens over the next few days is going to affect the outcome of the race. I think everybody pretty much knows that Barack Obama is going to be the Democratic nominee. So the question is, why is she running hard? I think she's running hard for a few reasons. One is because she's wanted to be president, and she still wants to go out and get her votes. I think she will win by a large margin. I think Senator Obama, though, will do well in the state. He's been very well organized in the state, as he has throughout the country. And I don't think it's bad for Democrats to have Democrats come out and vote in a Democratic primary. I think that will be good for Democrats throughout the country and here in West Virginia, too.
Mm-hmm. Professor Ore, what about in Nebraska? Who's pulling ahead there? How meaningful is this primary?
Well, actually not meaningful at all. We actually had our caucus back in February, so the Democrats actually moved their caucus to February 9th of this year, and Obama came out victorious. It was, you know, during that particular campaign, you know, it was quite a bit of electricity that took place in the state. The Democrats, with this being overwhelmingly red state during the general elections, have not really had anything to be excited about over the last few years, but there was quite a bit of excitement. But I think it also speaks to the fact that, you know, when you look at these caucuses and you look at the turnout in terms of raw numbers, given the fact that there's somewhat of a dearth of Democratic voters here in Nebraska, even so, only 10% the Democratic Party actually showed up. But with all of the excitement and the momentum that was taking place at that particular time, it appeared as though, there was quite a bit of turnout, and given the excitement that was, kind of surrounding the election or the caucus. But in all actuality, only about 10% of Democrats came out to vote, and that's sort of the norm with these caucuses now.
Mm-hmm. So is there then a primary tomorrow in addition to the caucus you've had?
Well, the primary tomorrow is actually just for the Democratic, like the state legislators.
I see.
The Republican primary is still on. But there's not a whole lot to talk about with respect to the presidential primary for the Democrats here.
Gentlemen, how is it that this happened? Hillary Clinton was the inevitable candidate not that long ago. People believed her victory in the Democratic nomination battle was a sure thing. And we find ourselves on May 12 with Senator Barack Obama appearing to be the inevitable candidate. It is quite a story, really.
I'll take that one first, Kathleen. I always thought that the inevitable narrative was overrated in this campaign on the Democratic side, just given the mood of the country. I mean, this is a country that is very unhappy with the track that the country is heading on, and it was what we political scientists call a change election. And it's really hard for, I think it was hard for Senator Clinton to sell herself as a change candidate. The former first lady, somebody who's a Washington fixture. And I think that her campaign staff did the best that they could. You go with your strengths, and Senator Clinton's strengths were experience. This wasn't an experience election. This was a change election. So I always thought that the idea that she was inevitable was overplayed.
Mm-hmm. It is somebody in the Times, I think, yesterday was talking about South Carolina 15 weeks ago, and I thought this was a fairly dramatic paragraph. South Carolina, can you believe that state, South Carolina, first to secede and first to open fire in the Civil War, is now catapulting a black man to the front of the presidential contest in a year that bodes well for Democrats? I just find that an amazing story, Professor Ori.
Yeah, in terms of the Southern strategy, I think that, first of all, when you go back to Iowa, this is a good opportunity for me to kind of do a post hoc analysis, if you will, because I don't think anyone could have predicted Obama's success. And I definitely did not predict it. I had Hillary Clinton actually winning the nomination, and it seems like I'll be wrong. But if you go back to Iowa and Obama's ability to take Iowa, whether or not you throw Oprah in there, whatever the case was, it was an anomaly to be sure. And then you go to New Hampshire, and Hillary wins New Hampshire. Then you come down to South Carolina. I think this sort of speaks, it speaks directly to the failure of the Southern strategy being played too early. The Southern strategy, of course, being used, 1964, then 1968, when Richard Nixon attempted to mobilize Southern support, Barry Goldwater suggested that you should go hunting where the ducks are, and that was that, we're not going to get African-American voters to support Goldwater. And so he went after the Southern voters, which were, white, sort of lower-class voters. Well, in this particular election, it's problematic to play the Southern strategy. Nixon was able to do the law and order, sort of code words. And even with Bill Clinton's sister soldier effect that took place.
Right.
But in this year, it's extremely difficult when you have an overwhelming number of African Americans in the primary. And in the South Carolina primary in October, you had a vote split because, one, you had African American women sort of split on the gender issue. Do they support Hillary Clinton? And then you also had, Bill Clinton, Toni Morrison, voted as the first black president. So this actually split, African Americans in terms of their allegiance to either voting along racial identity lines or voting along gender lines.
Mm-hmm.
So once they played the Southern strategy, it actually pushed African Americans away and created this cohesive support behind Obama. And that sort of was the rest of the story as it relates to race. And so that's always difficult for, Democratic candidates when you use the Southern strategy. It can help to mobilize white voters, but it also can hurt.
And rather unusual for the Clintons, of all people, to use that kind of strategy. A lot of people were wondering, what's going on here?
Well, it's an effective strategy. I mean, you know, race is a very sexy topic in America. I mean, and so it's a polarizing.
Right.
It's obviously polarizing because it creates an us versus a them. But the fact that African Americans are only 12% of the population, and then you look at, you know, the actual number of voters, that number becomes even smaller. And so they have a lot more to gain, but it just so happens that in the South, many of the white voters have actually opted to the Republican Party at the state level since 1964. So much of those southern states now have large numbers of African American voters, and so it's very difficult to play that card during the primary.
Mm-hmm. Professor White, your comments on their playing that card, the Clintons.
Well, I think South Carolina was an interesting race, Kathleen, and you have to remember it was a three-way race back then with Clinton, Obama, and Edwards. Mm-hmm. And Edwards is was a native son of South Carolina, and the idea of the race card being played came after South Carolina with Bill Clinton's comments about, well, Jesse Jackson won it too. You know, we're surprised by it or not, I think the Clintons chose an electoral strategy that once Edwards got out of the race, that they needed to go get the voters that were left. If 90% of the African American voters in the South are going to vote for Senator Obama, then she had to secure her votes among her base,
mm-hmm.
which are women and working class whites.
So, actually, right around that time, if I can interject here,
sure.
Right around that time, you had the fairy tale comment made by Bill Clinton, and then you also had Hillary suggesting, you know, when discussing the 1964 Civil Rights Act, that, you know, had LBJ not sign that, and really kind of minimal, I guess, marginalizing the importance of Martin Luther King. And so that was actually interpreted by the media. I don't think African Americans would have been able to, you know, put those pieces together in terms of a racial argument, but the media actually made that argument, and it resonated in the African American community. And I think those two pieces worked to, you know, racialize it.
Right. Senator Durbin of Illinois, close friend of Senator Obama's, urged him to run early on, said there are moments in life when you can pick the time, but when it comes to running for president, the time can pick you. You have been picked. This is your moment. Is there something to that, that this is his moment? This was the year for him to run?
I think when the Democratic frontrunner is somebody who had as high negatives as Senator Clinton had, and in a year that's a change election, I think Senator Durbin's comments were well taken. Just like 1992 was a good year for President Clinton to run. You know, everybody thought, you know, thinking back to those years, that, oh, Mario Cuomo is the presumptive nominee, he's going to run. And it's just, you can't win if you don't run. And if you don't take your opportunity when it arises, you may never get another opportunity. This was a year that the Republican brand was way down, still is way down. You see what's happening in the special elections. We're losing the seat to the Speaker, losing the Republican seat, a very strong Republican seat in Louisiana, fighting very hard for a very Republican seat in Mississippi. This is a year when the Republican brand is way down, and it was a good time for Senator Obama to take his chance. So, yeah, I think he was given good advice by his colleague.
Has her campaign branded him, though, as a black candidate who can't get elected because all of the hardworking white people have her support?
Well, I mean, I think that does actually come into play. But I think with the Clintons, they simply dropped the ball. You know, the ticket could have easily been billed, you know, Billary ticket. You had Bill Clinton coming in with experience. You had Hillary Clinton coming in, you know, in terms of some popularity, but she's clearly a polarizing figure. But the expectation was that, you know, Bill Clinton would be able to temper that. And so you get two for the price of one. But I think that, you know, they simply did not run the campaign, I guess, on the grounds of, you know, him being a dignitary and, you know, simply marketing the campaign based on, hey, you know, when I was president, we had economic prosperity. I think had they done that, they would have been able to, you know, mobilize those voters who, you know, can look back there and, you know, it's a fact that the economy was doing well at that time. And I think Obama was able to simply seize the moment, given his ability to, you know, electrify crowds and whatnot and his oratorical skills.
Mm-hmm. How was he able, gentlemen, to pull off this large victory in North Carolina and win by and lose just by a little bit in Indiana, considering the 3 weeks, the incredibly tough 3 weeks he had been through before those primaries?
Well, I mean, I think the North Carolina victory showed that Senator Obama is very good or does very well among certain groups, African-Americans in North Carolina, young people in North Carolina. North Carolina has changed a great deal in the past several decades. And if you look where he won, if you look at the map, he won all throughout the state, but built up huge margins in the Triad, which is the Greensboro area, the Triangle, which is Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill, and then Mecklenburg County. So he won upper-class, educated white voters who work in technology industries and in banking. He won through the rural South, and he won through the rural African-American districts back east in North Carolina. And he won African-Americans everywhere in North Carolina, which is a sizable part of the Democratic coalition in that state. So I think that state sets up very well for him and is a cautionary tale for the Republicans in the upcoming general election. Indiana, I think it's a similar narrative. That Senator Obama did very well in the cities in Indiana, and also did surprisingly well in other parts of the state.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, in terms of those southern states that he's actually won, I don't think that really speaks to the general election. I think that sizable number of those voters are African American. Come general election, I think that, you know, that will all be sort of diluted, if you will, or offset, you know, by the Republicans who will be overwhelmingly white in that state, or just in general in the South. Because I don't have him winning a single southern state unless, of course, there's this dream ticket, and we can talk about that a little later. But Kerry didn't win a single southern state. Gordon won a single southern state. Bill Clinton was able to win four southern states each time, and according to Earl and Merle Black, you know, so goes the South.
Mm-hmm.
So goes the election.
Let's welcome phone calls for both our guests, and we'll take them momentarily. We're talking, well, the primaries in West Virginia. Clinton is expected to win fairly big tomorrow, and there is a primary in Nebraska, but there's already been a caucus in Nebraska. We're looking at the inevitability of the nomination of Senator Barack Obama and how it happened, and it's really quite a story. We'll move ahead and talk about the general election. And also, there's been a lot of talk. One of the websites published a list of the likely vice presidential nominees that Obama will put on the ticket. Number one was Jim Webb, which I thought was interesting. So we'll look at pluses and minuses, and would it be too much change for the Democratic Party, and have they been through so much negativity that it would be an impossibility for there to be an Obama-Clinton ticket? We'll talk about all of that and welcome your thoughts on it. We have two guests with us, Professor James White, Associate Professor Political Science at Concord University, Professor DeAndre Ore, Associate Professor Political Science at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. If you want to send an email, do that at talk@wpr.org. And think about this. This was in, I think we can review in the Times yesterday. It would be interesting to ponder on this and hear your thoughts. Now the entire nation and countless foreigners are absorbing a moment that had seemed decades away, if possible at all. A blend of oratory, biography, optimism, and cool confidence. Does it make us rethink the relevance of race, the logic of affirmative action, and other societal forces that have evolved slowly through the eras of Jim Crow, desegregation, and massive immigration? Call, okay? Where are you? Call. We got a lot to talk about here today. when you're totally silent. 800-486-8655. We'll be with you in just a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All things political this hour, 800-486-8655, 227-2050. For those of you who are joining us in Milwaukee, and our guests are from the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, and from Concord University, Professor DeAndre Ore, Associate Professor at Nebraska, Professor James White, Associate Professor Political Science at Concord University. Let's start with an email as the phone calls are coming in. This is from Fontana. I've not heard, gentlemen, anyone talk about Chuck Hagel, a bolting Republican, as a possible VP candidate. Mr. Hagel rejects the present administration policies, and on the ticket he would pull in those who view themselves as the true conservative Republicans and the independents, and Mr. Obama and he would truly be an unbeatable ticket. It would be in keeping with the idea of really pulling the country together and solving problems. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I in terms of Hagel's vice president, I mean, the suggestion of him being a vice president, I mean, he's very moderate. And I think right now what you see in terms of like what we call the median voter theorem, the candidates have to line themselves up somewhat to the middle, but clearly in the ideological position of the party. If you get John McCain is very attractive, I think, as it relates to Obama's candidacy for the Republican Party, because John McCain is only slightly to the right. Obama's clearly to the left. At the current, McCain would be capable of gaining a few of those voters, you know, slightly to the left. Hagel could actually help to, you know, attract those voters who, you know, are anti-war voters, and, you know, that would maintain that sort of middle of the road candidacy. But in terms of, I mean, I think right now McCain is in a pretty good position. He may need someone a little bit more to the right, because, you know, but I'll also say this in terms of those voters to the right. Those voters are absorbed into the party, just like those voters who are to the left of Obama, you know, those who might suggest that he's not discussing enough racial policy. Those voters really have nowhere to go. And so McCain's candidacy right now, being sort of flat in the middle, he doesn't really have to appeal to the evangelicals. And I think with the economy being so bad right now, I really don't think that they will vote for the other party, nor will they go fishing on that day. I think they will definitely have to come out to vote. So, I mean, it's logical. I mean, but I don't know. Let me get another perspective on that.
All right, Professor White.
The email was suggesting Hagel for Obama's running mate, right?
Right.
I don't really see that. I mean, those of us who love politics and who study politics and who teach politics and listen to radio shows like yours, Kathleen, we have to understand that we're the ones who are different. Most people aren't disengaged. So
I know.
The idea of, for better or worse, and I'd argue worse, but then again, this is what I do for a living. Senator Hagel makes a lot of sense to those of us who study this stuff, or at least has some appeal because well, okay, you know, this helps you get the voters in the middle. But it's important to remember that most voters really don't tune into politics, not even presidential politics, for another couple months. So for Senator Obama to go with somebody like Senator Hagel, who disagrees with him on almost everything except the war, would be very difficult for the Democrats to swallow. The Democratic base, you know, Karl Rove made the last election about the base. You know, we're going to win our base. You Democrats mobilize your base, and we'll have an election where 50% of the country comes out, our base against your base. And it, just like 2000, it was a very, very close election. So in politics, you have to do two things, right? You have to mobilize your base, and then you have to win the middle. I don't see Senator Hagel helping either of the candidates with that first part, which is mobilizing the base. And I think this is a year the Democratic base is already mobilized, has been mobilized by this campaign between two very strong candidates who've registered lots of voters. I don't see Senator Hagel helping with that. I'd see him hurting with that. Winning the middle is the other half of it. Senator Hagel would undoubtedly help there. But I think Senator Obama has lots of Democratic options that would also help him win the middle, including Senator Clinton, but other people like Sam Nunn, Wesley Clark, Jim Webb would be Democrats who agree with Senator Obama on many more issues than Senator Hagel does.
Mm-hmm. Professor Ori, we got to talk about this Obama-Clinton match. There was an interesting comment from a Hillary supporter who is black who said that could backfire because Americans can't handle too much change at once. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's the only hope that the Democrats have.
Really?
I do. I don't see a vice presidential candidate that Obama could, I guess, get to join his ticket that would be able to offset, one, the issue of race. I think that race will be a polarizing factor because, again, it's easy when an African-American candidate runs to create an us versus them, just like if an Hispanic candidate ran, you could actually bring up issues like immigration, and because immigration is such a strong buzzword, it would actually mobilize, the us versus them factions. I think that with the Clintons, you get the three for the price of one. You get Obama, you get Bill, and you get Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that is so far-fetched. I'm not sure if they can agree to do that given, the disagreements that and the conflict that's, I guess, been taking place throughout the primary season. But if, in fact, they could, I guess, come to a happy compromise for the, for the betterment of the party, that it very well could create this dream team and the best opportunity for them to win. I mean, if you look at Bill Clinton and his, Democratic leadership conference membership, I mean, that was a fairly conservative organization. And so with Bill Clinton actually being more, I guess, tad bit to the right, I think that could actually balance Obama being so far to the left. But of course, Hillary being as polarizing as she is, I think if you kind of mix all that together, you get a happy median that could possibly challenge McCain.
Do you agree, Professor White?
No, but I think that's why these shows are so interesting. Professor Ori made a very good case for putting Senator Clinton on the ticket. I actually think it works the other way. I don't think that she helps him anywhere. I think she helps him in the national polls and for these debates on TV. But as far as actually helping him win the type of states that he needs to win in this election, and people would point to Ohio and Florida as places that she could help him. I think she does more to hurt him in places in other areas of the electoral map. I think that Senator Obama's narrative in this election is that it's a change election. It's a time to do new things in Washington, D.C., and I really don't know how you make that argument with Senator Clinton on the ticket.
My argument would be really more so with Bill being associated with the ticket. And so if you go back down south again and you look at 92 and 96, when Bill was able to win four southern states, again, at current, I don't think Obama could win one single southern state. But I think if, in fact, Bill and Hillary were on the ticket, you possibly could get Arkansas and Tennessee. But, typically Louisiana would come on board. Georgia and Florida typically will flip-flop. But if you can get Tennessee and Arkansas, or just Arkansas, Louisiana, you've actually fractured the South. And I think that's very possible, given the economy. It's a very poor region. The one issue that has always fractured the South has been race. If you go back to Carville's, it's the economy stupid. I think that folks are really, really hurting right now, and she's been able to attract those working-class whites, which a large number of those working-class whites are in the South. So I think that's one area for sure that would help you know, in terms of serving as an asset for the Clinton.
You know, isn't it interesting, though, Professor Orey, that you're talking about Bill and Hillary? He's not on a ticket. She is, right?
Right. But, I mean, the reality of it is that
they are.
When people see Hillary, and the only reason that Hillary, this also, I guess, it's forced me to revisit the issue of race and gender in this country, because, you know, I would have never thought, I guess, in the next few years or so even, that an African-American male would have been able to do as well as he has done relative to a white female. And this has clearly shown that, you know, gender still, in terms of, you know, gender discrimination is alive and well in terms of perceptions. Now, I don't think there's any other woman candidate that would have been able to be as successful as Hillary. And I say that to go back to your point. You know, Bill's not on the ticket. Hillary clearly would not be in the position that she's in had she not been, you know, the wife of Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really think that if you could play up the fact that, you know, again, 92, 96, you look at the economy and how, you know, we were able to go into a surplus. These are all issues that resonate very, very well given, you know, the economy. And then Obama being against the war, I think all of that could accumulate to make a very, very strong case.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to callers. Rodney from Hudson. Hi, Rodney. Hey, Rodney, are you there? He's not. Let's go to Frank from Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Frank.
Very interesting situation. Interesting guests. I have a suggestion, which I think is practical but unlikely, which is that the contest between Hillary and Barack Obama is really good for the country, that it should continue to the convention, but that they should take a high road there and to victory in the general election, which is that Hillary should call out Barack Obama, what is your greater America and how do we get there? And that Barack Obama should do the same thing to Hillary, and they should both very vigorously attack the right-wing Republican Party and how it got the country to its current pass, and use the same approach to John McCain. John, what is a greater America, and how will you get us there? And I think it would work. So, thank you.
Thanks, Frank, for your call. Professor White, you want to start?
Sure. I think I'm not sure that it's been great for the country, although I would agree. I think any time more people vote, that it's good for the country, that more political participation is generally good. I think it's been very, very good for the Democrats, the contest between Senator Clinton and Senator Obama. Mobilized the entire Democratic Party, really increased Democratic voter registration, got people used to voting for the Democratic line, and I think it has Republicans very worried. I think the Frank makes a good point about you know, we all think about ways we could market these campaigns, but the other side of this, where Senator Obama would say, "No, you know what, June 3rd is plenty long enough," is because there comes a time when people need to come together and do things, practical things like raise money and focus one message from one campaign on the opposition, in this case Republicans. So I would think that Senator Obama, I believe Senator Clinton and the rest of the Democrats would agree with him on this, that they would say that June 3rd is long enough. We'll pick a nominee by then. We'll let the rest of this primary season play out. We'll pick a nominee, then we'll come together as a party and do the things that you need to do to win, which is consolidate and mobilize and raise money.
Professor Orey, what do you think?
I totally agree. I think that, you know, by June 3rd, the two candidates will come together and unify the party, however they decide to do that, in terms of, you know, who the choice is for vice president or whatnot. I mean, I don't know what might happen there. But by that point, there has to be a conceding on the part of Hillary and, I guess a move in the direction of unity is the only way to, you know, support the party.
We go next to Matt from Lake Geneva. Hi, Matt.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm wondering about the libertarian factor this year. You know, E.J. Dion, the Washington Post writer, has identified what he believes is to be 20% of the American population actually are serious limited government thinkers. You know, they think that both the Republicans and the Democrats have taken us in the wrong direction. And I'm noticing that Ron Paul is still active in the background. He's just released a book that is number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. It's slotted to hit number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list later in May. He's in the top 3 or 4 on Amazon.com. He had the second most attended book signing, second only to Bill Clinton in New York City just last week. And I noticed that Bob Barr, the former congressman from Georgia, that he's seeking the Libertarian Party nomination. And I'm wondering if a lot of this activity is going to undermine John McCain and why don't these people have a voice, this 20% in our system?
You know? All right, Matt, thanks for the call. Professor Ori.
Yeah, no, I think it goes back to that whole median voter concept. Even though it's a dated theory, I think it's, you know, still alive and well, and that is that, you know, you fix yourself right around the middle of the you know, ideological spectrum. And in this particular case, again, I mean, if you go back to people like Jesse Jackson, Pat Buchanan, they're at the extreme, and you can't appeal, you cannot appeal to those individuals or activists or groups because it ends up polarizing those 80% that are in the opposite direction of them on the ideological spectrum. So you fix yourself sort of right in the middle, and they're absorbed into the party. I mean, you really could ignore them. I mean, that's you know, I mean, it's a normative, I guess, issue in terms of that's not what we ought to be doing, but that's the reality in a majoritarian system.
Yeah, I think Professor Ori makes a good point. Although I'll come back to the flip side of it, right? I think elections are about two things: mobilizing the base and winning the middle. And that's the real math that Karl Rove told everybody he had in 2006, and he was wrong about it because mobilizing the base wasn't enough for the Republicans in 2006. The base wasn't mobilized in the congressional election, and they lost the middle. I agree with Matt that somebody like Bob Barr and Ron Paul are real threats to John McCain. You know, you look at the numbers in the last presidential election with President Bush winning 90-95% of the Republican vote with a mobilized base. People like Bob Barr can eat into that, and that makes winning very, very, would make winning very, very difficult for Senator McCain. If Professor Ori has referenced the 1992 election a couple times, I think it's important to remember that was a three-way election, that Ross Perot, even though the exit polls show that Perot took as many votes away from Bush as Clinton, you know, a vote not cast by a Republican for a Republican is a big loss to Republicans. And Perot was a Republican. He's the demographic of the Republican. I think it's the same true for Bob Barr.
Yeah. What is Senator McCain, considering the fact that people in this country are just really upset with the direction of the country? 81% think we're on the wrong track. They're very, very tired of the war. The economy is in the toilet. These are bad times for America. What in the world can Senator McCain do to disassociate himself from this current administration and to make himself a winning candidate when he appears to be on the wrong side of what everybody's upset about?
I'll go again if you want. I think Senator McCain's got a hard road ahead of him. I really do, and I think that, you know, just going back to this, I hate to beat the drum over and over again, but I tend to look at elections just as numbers, and Senator McCain is going to have a really hard time with the median voter that Professor Ori talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a Republican year, and for the reasons that you said, Kathleen. So what do you do in a situation like that, in a situation where you're having a hard time raising money, where Barack Obama's got all the money in the world, where the Republican Party doesn't have very money, they're defending a lot of Senate seats, they're having a hard time raising money, the Democrats have lots of money. What do you do? I can predict that this campaign, contrary to what Senator McCain said the other day, it's going to be a very negative campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see Reverend Wright on TV a lot. Because what you try to do is you try to drive down the median voter. You try to get the median voter to stay home by saying, well, I don't want to vote for either of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see if Senator Obama can do what he's done in the primaries, which is mobilize people anyway in the face of negative campaigning. Mm-hmm. That was a story, I think, of success in North Carolina and Indiana. That you got voters to the polls even when Reverend Wright is on cable news 24/7 and on the morning news and evening shows too.
Right.
Yeah, but I think you also have to look at who those people were, and that is you have educated voters, and particularly when you look at whites, you have middle class educated voters, and you have young voters who are typically more tolerant, and so those individuals will not, I guess, allow the media to racialize the campaign. One of the problems with running a deracialized campaign, simply a campaign when minority candidates typically will run on issues that. Racially, that are racially transcendent, and trying to create a race-neutral campaign. One of the problems is that the media or the opposing candidate can actually racialize the campaign. So in this particular case, you get the Reverend Wright story coming out over and over and over sound bites about this disillusioned, sort of liberal approach that Reverend Wright has taken, with the conspiracy theories and so on and so forth. Well, the people that are in support of Obama, the middle class, young voters, those issues don't resonate as well. But herein lies the problem. It will resonate with those lower-class white voters who tend to see African-Americans and other minority groups as, a racial threat. And so that's going back to an old theory. V.O. Key, 1949, suggests that in those areas where there are high concentration of blacks, in this case it will be minorities, you tend to see more hostility. And so I think that McCain is actually in a pretty good position because, those voters who have supported Hillary will probably cross over, those lower-class voters
mm-hmm.
will cross over and support McCain. One, because Obama's clearly to the left. McCain is to the right slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can actually, from a spatial angle, he can actually attract those voters that are closer to him ideologically than they would be to Obama.
Isn't it ironic, though, how it all works? Because you look at the smear campaign that was used against him in South Carolina, saying that he was the father, illegitimate daughter who was black, and it was a child that they had adopted. You would think that he would say, "We will have none of this. Wright is out of here. We're going to have no campaign that deals with race in a negative fashion," because it was done to him, for heaven's sake.
But maybe the lesson he learned is that it works.
It has worked over the years. I mean, you go back to Willie Horton. I mean, like I said, you go back to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton used Sister Soldier when he went to Jesse Jackson's. It was an event at the Rainbow Coalition that Jesse Jackson sponsored. And Bill Clinton went in. And Sister Soldier was this rapper who had basically said, I guess if African-Americans stopped killing African-Americans in terms of gang violence at that time and start killing whites, basically it would get individuals' attention.
Yeah.
And Bill Clinton said, hey, if you take those words and you replace whites with blacks and blacks with whites in her comments, you get a David Duke.
Right.
And so this was a clear attempt by Clinton to distance himself from Jesse Jackson because of, being too closely aligned with African Americans, which is an extreme group in the country. They're to the left. And so that goes back to, even distance yourself from, as the comment was made earlier, from, like a Ron Paul or whatnot, you have to come back to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it goes back to the us versus them. I mean, if you can create that us versus them, then you're in a better position to attract crossover voters.
The only thing I'd say about that, and I think that Professor Ori makes a very good point, that in some parts of this country, that has been an effective tactic for Senator Clinton to use against Senator Obama. But it's important to understand that it hasn't been successful in all parts of the country, including places like Wisconsin and Nebraska and Oregon or Nevada, that Senator Obama has been able to attract working-class white votes in many parts of the country. Now, not in parts of the country like the one where I live and in southern Virginia, southwestern Virginia, I say, but he has been able to attract a winning coalition that includes that median voter, that crossover voter, including independents and Republicans.
But as it relates to the racial threat thesis, it's in those areas where there are high concentrations.
Right.
So where, both blacks and whites or Hispanics and whites are in, increasing numbers where, they actually see each other. Right. And that creates a visible threat.
Right. Let's pause for a moment and we'll return and take more phone calls. We are talking, it's All Things Political Monday at 9. Our guests are Professor DeAndre Ori, who is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, Professor James White, Associate Professor of Political Science at Concord University. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. The email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we proceed with more telephone calls, gentlemen, I just thought I'd pass along a compliment. These two men are terrific. As a political junkie, I've listened to way too many people who think they know what this is all about. I've learned more about how to view this election in the last 20 minutes, and now doubly more because it's been 20 minutes since this person wrote in, than during most of the last few months. That comes from Judy. So you're obviously good guests. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.
Let's go to David from Eau Claire. Hi, David.
Sure. Hi. And I'm a native Nebraskan, so I have to say go Cornhuskers. But my comment was, what do you think the chances are of some states that haven't voted Democratic for a while voting Democratic? And I was thinking about Virginia, maybe even Montana, maybe North Carolina, and maybe a vice presidential candidate such as either Jim Webb, that's more resonant with conservative Democrats, or maybe Bill Richardson, who has Hispanic support possibly. And then also, I think it's Nancy Sebelius in Kansas. I mean, someone who was a female candidate for vice president that would maybe help within the party's base. And I think since Obama has a financial advantage and seems to be very organized about getting out his supporters for locally, maybe that could be a possibility of some of those states going Democratic.
Well, I think with the Republican ale, I don't think a place like Kansas make a case for a Democrat winning a state like that. I'm even leery with Colorado. If you look at just historically, you know, I guess predicting time B from time A. And then if you look at, I guess, the West Coast with many of those states that have typically voted, I guess, Democrat in recent years, but there's a number of states, I guess, in that Pacific area that consistently vote Republican. The only state I think, if in fact Obama runs, I mean, if as it is now, you know, not knowing who the vice presidential candidate would be, the only state that I think that he could actually capture in terms of swing states would be New Mexico, with respect to the Hispanic voters, you know, being the swing voter there. I'm not even, you know, depending on who Obama uses as his vice presidential candidate, I'm not even so sure that California, you know, if we go back to, you know, pre-1992, I believe it was, you know, California had gone Republican for, you know, all those years, almost dating back to, you know, the 60s. So I think that it's going to be a lot more tough, depending on who his candidate, I mean, his vice presidential candidate is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also why it's good, because I disagree. I think that Senator Obama will win Virginia. I think In fact, I imagine the Republicans will shut down that state pretty quickly. I think Mark Warner is going to win a huge margin in the Senate race. Virginia is trending Democratic. So I agree with the caller. I think that Obama changes the map and turns it into. I agree with Professor Ori, too, that we have been locked into this red-blue map, the Republican L, but I think that Howard Dean, as the Democratic National Committee chairman, has shown that the Democrats will compete for open House seats in Mississippi and Louisiana. So I do see an expanded map for the Democrats beginning in Virginia, also including Montana, like the caller said, and maybe even Kansas if Sebelius is on the ticket. I don't see that. I think that Obama will need some foreign policy experience on the ticket.
Yeah, but I will concede and say, yeah, Virginia, I definitely think that Obama could win Virginia. I mean, that's a state where Doug Wilder won governor. So, I definitely would concede that point.
Yeah. What about Bill Richardson? The phrase authenticity has been associated with Obama and one of the reasons that he resonates with so many people. I think you could probably say the same about Richardson. He seems a little disheveled at times, but he's got that He's got that touch, you know. He's got that honesty kind of touch to him, don't you think?
I think I've got the greatest respect for anybody who will throw their hat in this ring and try to fight it out to run for president. And I think Governor Richardson acquitted himself well, and that he could help Senator Obama by attracting Hispanic votes. I think he'd be a good addition to the ticket, particularly helping him in places like New Mexico, Colorado, and Texas, which the Democrats seem to be fighting for these days.
Yeah. We're out of time. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll have you back. The race isn't over. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Sorry, Professor Ori.
Our guest this hour, Professor DeAndre Ori, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. Professor James White, Associate Professor of Political Science at Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. And we thank them so much. It was a good hour, wasn't it? I thought so. Hope you thought so. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and for all of your calls and emails as well. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we're going to have some fun with lists. So all of that's coming up.